there's just a novelty and a magic to doing a radio show in Antarctica. Every time I go on the radio and do my show and say, you're listening to Esoterra Australis live from McMurdo Station, Antarctica, even though I know that I have maybe 3 listeners tops, it's still really fun to say that.
You're listening to Radio Survivor, the sound of strong communities. Hello, everybody. My name is Eric Klein.
I'm Paul Rees-Madel, and joining us via Skype from San Francisco is Jennifer Waite.
Hello.
And today we're going to travel to the least populated continent on the planet virtually.
That the finest community radio station on the least populated continent.
Indeed. We're going to Antarctica, and we're going to talk with someone at McMurdo Station, which is an outpost that is operated by the National Science Foundation of the United States.
And they have a radio station.
And they have a radio station where residents can be DJs, just like a community or college station elsewhere, only this one's in Antarctica. We'll be talking with Elizabeth Deliquis, and she is a broadcast engineer, and she helps to operate the station Ice Radio in Antarctica. Welcome to Radio Survivor, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here. I'm thrilled to be on the show. This is an honor. So thank you so much.
Well, it's an honor to have a chance to speak to, you know, the other end of the world in many ways down in Antarctica, where you are a day ahead of us. Maybe just to kind of start for people who aren't familiar with the fact that there are human beings in Antarctica. Can you tell us, what is McMurdo Station?
Yes. McMurdo Station is one of 3 research stations on the continent. They're run by the United States Antarctica Program, which in itself is part of the National Science Foundation, which is a federal science research program. So there's 3 research stations. There's one at South Pole. There's one at McMurdo Station, which is on the edge. It's actually on an island called Ross Island. And then there's Palmer Station, which is a really tiny station on the peninsula close to South America. So McMurdo Station is the largest U.S. research station. It's also the largest station on the continent. In the summer, there can be up to 1,200 people. When I was there, the most we ever had was around 900. And in the winter, there's a small, what we call winter overpopulation, who just live and work there to kind of keep the lights on and do maintenance over the winter and get ready for the summer season. Right now, there are 133 people on station. It's been that way since April.
I'll note that it is winter there right now in Antarctica, as it is spring and going into summer for people in the northern hemisphere. And so down there in Antarctica, the winter, what is that like?
It's dark out 24/7. That's probably been the biggest adjustment. It's total darkness. We had the last sunrise on, when was it? April 19th. And it won't get light again until August 19th, I want to say. And it's pretty cold. It's not as cold as it is at Pole right now. It's about 2 degrees below zero, which is actually pretty mild, although it's also very windy. Antarctica
is
the windiest. Fahrenheit? Yep, 2 below Fahrenheit. I think a couple of days ago it was 20 below Fahrenheit. Wind chill lately can get down to negative 40, negative 50. So it's very, very dark and very cold.
So in general, yeah. why do people go to Antarctica, and what are all the scientists doing there?
So over the winter, most of the science research is focused on physics and atmospheric science. During the summer, there's a lot more research on biology, ecology, geology. There's some physics research. Right now, we just have a few space and atmospheric science projects going on right now. Antarctica is because of its location, it's a really good location for studying physics and outer space, atmospheric sciences, and things like that. And then why do people come to Antarctica just in general, like for work?
Yeah.
So for me, it was mostly just, I don't know, adventure, the opportunity to live abroad and get paid, the opportunity to go to a continent that very, very few people get to see in their life. So I think that's a really common draw for people. I think some people, there are a lot of people who work as contractors, just that's their lifestyle, that's how they make their money. So Antarctica's part of their contracting circuit. Over the summer, I met a lot of folks who will work here for the summer season, and then they work for the Park Service or something similar in the off season.
So I first learned about there being a radio station in Antarctica when I was watching an episode of Anthony Bourdain's show on CNN, the show Parts Unknown. And I had tuned in to an episode about Antarctica, and interwoven in the episode were a few sort of mysterious glimpses of a radio station. And I'm somebody who likes to tour radio stations all over the country and a couple outside of the United States. And so when I saw glimpses of this radio station that wasn't even really it wasn't described in the episode at all. The episode was about the overall experience of Antarctica. So I just caught this tiny, tiny sliver of a glimpse of radio happening in Antarctica and was intrigued and started researching it. So can you tell me why there's a radio station there in the first place?
Yeah. So I'll back up a little bit. I started working at McMurdo October 14th of last year. So I've been on the ice for almost 8 months continuously. I was a communications operator for the summer season, which is like, it's basically field camp dispatch. And then I've been the broadcast engineer since February, and I will have that job until August. And then I'll have a 6 week break back in the States. And then I come back for another season next summer, also as the broadcast engineer. So if all goes as planned, I'll be on the ice for 14 months with a 6 week break. Okay. Why is there radio in Antarctica? So my understanding is that the station has been around since there's been a station in some form or another since the 1960s. I'm going to quote from this article from the Antarctic Sun, which is the online newspaper of the United States Antarctica Program. So this is me quoting then editor Peter Rasek. The original radio station was on the air as early as 1963 under the call sign KMSA, according to Billy Ace Penguin Baker, a retired Navy radio man who, between 1962 and 1980, spent 4 winters and 15 summers in Antarctica as part of Operation Deep Freeze. Operation Deep Freeze is the U.S. military's continual support of science activities at McMurdo Station. So it started out KMSA in the 60s, and then in 1971, the call sign was WASA, and in 1975, it was AFAN, which is American Forces Antarctic Network. So the radio station has evolved kind of as the station has evolved. The McMurdo started out as a naval base in the mid-1950s. And it was under the U.S. Navy was the primary supporter and operator of McMurdo Station until the early 1990s. And then the National Science Foundation became the primary manager. And now the U.S. military has a smaller secondary role. So historically, the radio station has been around, I think, primarily as a morale booster for servicemen who were working in Antarctica, and it still has that role to this day. And even though the National Science Foundation is now the primary manager of the station, the military still has a pretty big role in managing ice radio and our radio and TV infrastructure, because it's kind of been grandfathered into that system.
And this is
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And this is Eric Klein here at Radio Survivor. And I think it might help the listeners to get a mental picture. For my part, out of complete ignorance, when McMurdo Station, the word was conjured in my mind, a building in the snow. And I'm looking at McMurdo Station photographs on the internet, and it's clearly like it's a small town. It's a large amount of buildings with roads. So the radio station where you work in Antarctica, it serves this this tiny town, this community of people working at the station.
Yeah, that's correct.
They're driving around in their trucks, and they live in different places and work in different places throughout the little
region.
That's
right. So, if you look at a photo of McMurdo, in pretty much all of the photos you'll see, at least from the last 10 years, there'll be a big blue building in the middle of town, and that's building 155. And the ICE radio studio is in 155, mm-hmm. and our antenna is on the roof. And that's where we have our galley, which is the cafeteria. It's called galley from the Navy days. There are some dorms in that building. And then outside of 155, there are several more dorm buildings. And then there are a bunch of work centers. So we have further out of town, you have the carp shop, which is where the carpenters work. You have the waste barn, yeah. which is where all of the wasties, we call them, work. and then you have...
That's great.
You have the fuels barn, you have the chapel, you have building 165, which is where the weather forecasters and observers and flight following yeah. work. You have the helo hangar, you have Crary, which is the main laboratory for where all the scientists work, especially during the summer. ICE Radio serves the McMurdo population primarily. We're definitely low power. Our transmitter is 50 watts. There's a large hill next to McMurdo Station called Observation Hill. We all call it Ob Hill. And depending on where you are in the surrounding area, Ob Hill may block the signal and you sure. can't get it. There's the New Zealand Antarctic Program has a tiny research station about 2 miles away from McMurdo, and this is Scott Base. And Ob Hill is roughly between us and Scott Base. So I've had folks at Scott Base tell me they can't pick up ICE radio because you have Ob Hill blocking the signal.
We have that problem here back in civilization yeah, as well sometimes.
Exactly. But whereas if you're out at one of the runways for the airplanes that mm-hmm. land in the summer, you can get a pretty good signal. I've heard people get it up to 10 miles away. Anywhere you don't have like a mountain, right. Antarctica is very, very flat. It's high elevation. It's very flat. So as long as you don't have Ob Hill in the way, you can get the signal. I've heard, you know, 5-10 miles away.
And it's over FM. Correct?
It's over FM. That's right.
And there's not another radio yeah. station on the same frequency like might happen here in North America.
And Elizabeth.
No.
Elizabeth Deliquest, you're at McMurdo Station in Antarctica and you make radio. What kind of radio do you make?
Well, that's where you get into how ICE radio is really, really different from radio, especially community radio or college radio back home. So my biggest surprise that I encountered with ICE radio when I first got here is that you cannot play your own music. You can only play music that's provided by the Defense Media Activity and by extension, American Forces Network, which is the agency within Defense Media Activity that provides us with all of our content. So American Forces Network provides us with the DVDs that we play on our movie channels. They provide us with like networked television, sports, news, it's the same yeah. service that a lot of people get when they're on ships.
So tell us what is the last song you played?
Oh, and to back up a little bit, I'm not sure if you've mentioned to our listeners that you run not only the radio station, but also a television station. So you're talking about content for both radio and television at McMurdo.
That's correct.
And so like, tell us about the music then. What kind of,
we're dying.
You know, we're sort of wanting to know, like, yeah. you know, is it top 40? Is how,
classic
you know,
rock.
how kind of filtered is it, I guess?
Okay. So we have three sources of music. We have content that's in our automation system, and that's stuff that DJs can play as well. It's mostly, let's see, if I broke down the music, it would be mostly... Let's see, we've got oldies, we've got classic rock, we've got like hard rock from the 80s, 90s, 2000s. We have a lot of pop, we have a lot of hip hop, we have country, we have a lot of country. So that's what's in our...
So these would be like recognizable songs to most people, things that they would be familiar on commercial radio, you know, kind of anywhere. But there's not going to be a lot of underground stuff, I guess.
There's not going to be any underground stuff. It's very much top 40, classic rock, oldies. And this is because the Defense Media Activity provides us with music that kind of fits their demographic, which is service members.
Yeah.
You know, when I was watching the episode of Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown about Antarctica, there were some scenes where they showed vintage records that were from, you know, the past. And then I've also read that there's this.
You're always going to get Jennifer's attention if you have a music library with vinyl, even if you're in Antarctica.
Yes.
Well, and then I've read in various articles that there's a massive vinyl library. So I'm curious what's in that library.
Yes. So as well as our digital and our CDs, we also have a vinyl collection. This is stuff that we got from the Navy back when the Navy was running McMurdo Station primarily. And we no longer get records. We've gotten them until about the early 90s. And I mean, I'm kind of spoiled because I cut my teeth on community radio when I was high school and college. I volunteered for WORT in Madison, and we have a huge record library as well, which covers a huge range of genres.
So I'm very familiar with WORT.
Yeah.
It's a great station. WORT.
Yeah. Yes. But our vinyl library is pretty great too. We have a lot of, and we have a slightly wider range of genres in the vinyl library. So as well as having a lot of classic rock and pop and country, we also have a small classical collection.
Sure.
We also have some Latin music, and we have a collection of religious music. And then we also have things like sound effects and 6 hour long Elvis Presley specials. And
Was that something like, that's like something provided for broadcast, right? That's not like something you could have bought in a store, yes. Right? That was specifically for like Armed Forces Network or something like that.
Neat.
Yes, that's correct. And I can send you, later on, I don't know what extra material you want. I can send you a ton of photos. I've got links to the Antarctic Sun. But yeah, I can send you a photo of our records. They all have American Forces Radio and Television Service stamped on them.
Yeah, please do.
A lot of the older
records
have sleeves that say property of the United States government. So yeah, these are specifically published for
use for the American on the Forces Network. Yeah, so you're allowed to, in addition to the CDs that you have and the music that's supplied over your automation system, you're allowed to play all this vinyl too, because it's part of the official bank, the official repository, if you will. That's fantastic.
Yep, that's
vintage
that's
Armed
exactly
Forces
right.
Radio vinyl.
And do DJs take much advantage of the vinyl? Does it get played very much?
Yep.
Really?
The vinyl gets played a lot. Usually every summer, there's at least one or two shows that are completely vinyl. My friend Zach has done an all vinyl show for, I think, at least 2 or 3 years called The Vinyl Frontier. This winter, I'm doing an hour long classical show called Esoterra Australis. And I would never do a classical show back home, because Madison, Wisconsin has so many classical shows between Wisconsin Public Radio and WORT. But there's no one else is doing a classical show on ICE Radio. So I thought, okay, I'll do a classical show. I'll do an all vinyl classical show. That's the only place in the world that I would do this.
Yeah, well,
you've got enough there to take care of it. You've got a big enough repository of music that's no problem to keep you supplied every week.
Yeah.
And
I'd say so. I haven't run out.
We're talking about ICE Radio in the McMurdo station in Antarctica, in case people are just tuning in.
So, Elizabeth, how many people volunteer at the radio station?
I'll just say a lot more people in the summer. And I think we had about on ICE Radio, when you're a volunteer DJ, you can either have a regular show or you can be what's called a floater, which means you get training and then you can just come into the studio and do a show whenever it's available. And I've never encountered another radio station in the States that has that structure. And I was a floater last summer because my work schedule changed every week. We all work 54 hours a week down here at McMurdo. So sometimes it was hard to find time to do a show. So because of that, I was a floater. And I think over the summer, we probably had about 30 floaters.
Oh, wow.
This winter we have, I think, five. Yeah, we have five regular shows, including mine. And I'll clarify, I'm not paid to do a show here.
It's a volunteer kind of thing, like community radio.
Yeah.
So what's on when there's not a live DJ? What's on the station?
When there is not a live DJ, we just have a mix of music from Ice Radio's automation system. Mm-hmm. So you can tune in. You can either listen on a radio or what most people do, I think, if they don't have a radio at their work center or in their vehicle, is they'll just tune to TV channel 6. And we have the radio stream routed to that channel. So you can tune to channel 6 and watch the look at the movie schedule and look at the dining menu for the galley and listen to music. So calling it a TV station is generous because we don't have a TV studio, but what we do have are, how many channels do we have? We have 25. Yeah, we have 25 channels.
And that's the only television available in Antarctica.
Yeah, the bandwidth here is really limited. So if you don't come down here with a hard drive full of your own movies, you're pretty much limited to whatever we have. We have free DVD rental in the station store. And then we also have 4 movie channels. We have 3 information scrolls, which just have a PowerPoint scroll of things like the mm-hmm. dining menu, the movie schedule, information about upcoming flights and, you know, lodging hours, who to call if, you know, the light bulb goes out in your dorm and you need to have a utility technician fix it. So things like that.
And Ice Radio is on one of those channels where there's the scroll.
Ice Radio is on one of the scroll channels. That's correct.
There's real history there. Like this is something where a lot of community and college stations got their start before they could be on FM, and sometimes even afterwards would be on a local cable system where there would be like a weather mm-hmm. scroll or community bulletin board. And then they would play the community radio station, radio station where I cut my teeth, WEFT in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, started out before they got their FM license underneath the scroll on the local cable TV channel. So this tradition carries forward in Antarctica.
I jumped to conclusions about, I assumed it was the analog
portion of channel 6 TV, which in the United States has been mostly turned off except for these low power TV stations that can be heard on FM. No, it's not quite the same thing.
Okay, I got excited.
And you were talking about the limited bandwidth there, and
that's internet bandwidth we're talking about, correct? Internet bandwidth.
Yeah. So it's my understanding that you don't stream online. Is that largely why? Because of bandwidth concerns?
Yep. It's a bandwidth issue. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And do you record your shows at all? I mean, do you record your shows or do other people record their shows?
Other people sometimes record their shows. I have not recorded my shows yet, mainly because I haven't felt a reason to. I've been hosting radio since I was 18. I know what I sound like and other people know what I sound like, so I don't really feel a need to. Having said that, I did record, I did an interview with a gentleman who works here in the summer who is kind of he's like our big music guy. He organizes or helps organize the New Year's Eve Summer Music Festival. And so I had him on Ice Radio and did a little interview with him about that.
Elizabeth,
and this is really
Deliquist,
tentative.
Please tell us more about the Summer Music Festival in McMurdo Station, Antarctica.
Okay. Well, it's called Ice Stock. It's been going on for a couple of decades at least. And it takes place on New Year's Eve. There's usually at least 10 acts. This year, I think there were 10 or 12. I was only there for the first half, and then I had to go to work. But the part that I was there for was really, really fun.
Oh, my gosh.
And
are these people, are the acts people who are already there as volunteer or as workers?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So and
these
all,
are just talented
it's all
people.
Volunteers.
And is this music
this
festival?
This is just townspeople.
Is this music festival in Antarctica broadcast on your radio station?
You know, it wasn't this year, and I don't know if it ever has.
Uh-huh.
It could probably be recorded, although the Defense Media and Activity Defense Media Activity and the National Science Foundation are really, really cautious about copyright, understandably.
Yeah.
So
understandably, you could,
The idea of there being a live music festival in Antarctica and there being a community radio station in Antarctica, I wanted to marry the two. I couldn't help myself, but I apologize.
Sure, it's a logical question.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, I'm not sure if I would go quite so far as to call Ice Radio a community radio station just because it doesn't fit the format of a community radio station back in the States. But I do think it kind of fills that role a little bit, but just because it's managed by the Defense Media Activity and the National Science Foundation, as opposed to like a local nonprofit or a university, it's it doesn't really fit that definition.
Sure, it's very unique.
But I see what you're saying.
Because you guys have volunteer DJs who contribute on a rotating regular basis, they have to follow a certain set of rules.
That's but you get to pick your music from amongst what's available to you, right? You still program your show. There's no rotation. Right. It doesn't sound like commercial radio, does it?
Well, no, not really. So I'll clarify. You have to play what the music that the DMA provides you.
Right.
But
yeah,
you can do
defensive
if you.
Activity,
I mean. Right? Yeah, if you get permission in advance, you can do music. You can do a live performance that's like public domain music. For example, I have a friend here. This hasn't been planned yet. This is something I'm hoping to pull off in the next month. I have a colleague here, one of the firefighters who plays the vibraphone, and he's very, very talented, and he can play classical compositions, and he's also composed his own music. And because his music wouldn't be, it would either be public domain or it wouldn't be copywritten, I could have him in the studio and do a live vibraphone performance, which is something I'm hoping to do later this month. And then people will also do interviews. I have a friend who comes into the station and plays music probably two or three times a week. And he did an interview recently with one of the janitors at McMurdo and one of the waste technicians at McMurdo, and just asked them things like, what's it like to be a janitor? How does the waste system work? So even though we can only play the music that's provided us, I think there's still a fair amount of space to be creative. And as long as you don't put your, especially if you don't put your content online, which is another thing, we're not allowed to put our recordings online for copyright reasons.
And does that, you know, I'm really interested in radio history, especially thinking about the fact that there's been a radio station there for 55 years or so.
In Antarctica.
In Antarctica at McMurdo. Are there efforts, you know, copyright aside, are there efforts to preserve, are there recordings of, you know, some of these old shows that people did back in the 50s? Or do you have archives of materials, photographs, you know, or anything that represent the history of the station? Do you know anything about that?
To my knowledge, there hasn't been a formal effort to do any kind of archiving or preservation. I do know if I dug through the Antarctic Sun photo library, I could probably find some older photos. I know the station, because it's existed under, it's evolved, it's existed under various call signs and frequencies, as I said earlier. And I'm pretty sure I could find some of that on the Antarctic Sun photo website. And by the way, that's a public website. Anybody can go there and, and search around. And it's a really, I'll send you a link after this interview. And I definitely recommend going there. And it's a good way to learn more about the United States Antarctica program as well. So there's definitely a little material on there. There's the Antarctic Sun article that you sent me, Jennifer. That one's a really good resource that kind of briefly touches on the history, but gives you a pretty thorough outline. And then, but other than that, if there are any recordings from the radio station itself, I don't know of them. I would guess probably not, other than the shows that people occasionally record. No, I mean, we don't have an air check system. We don't have an internet archive like a lot of radio stations do because of bandwidth.
Right. And we are talking with Elizabeth Delaquest, who is in Antarctica at McMurdo Station, and she is the engineer and also a broadcaster at Ice Radio, a 50-watt FM radio station broadcasting to Antarctica. And she's telling us all about the station, and we'll have some photos and links to many of the articles that she was just mentioning. We've talked about here ways that we learned about this radio station at McMurdo at our website, radiosurvivor.com/podcast, where you can learn more and more about this this fantastic radio station.
Government-run community radio station.
Government-run community radio station there at the other end of the planet from where we are here in North America.
If you don't mind me putting that label on it, I should say.
You can, Yeah, I would probably say National Science Foundation.
Yes, the National Science
Wonderful.
Foundation. Now, are there other radio stations there in Antarctica, or that you can receive there, or at McMurdo?
There are two other radio stations. They are they broadcast entirely American Forces Network programming. Mm-hmm. So ICE Radio is the only one of the three that has volunteer DJs.
And is that on FM as well?
That's on FM.
Yep. And does that come in via satellite, or are you getting it like uploaded via the internet? It comes in via satellite.
It comes in via satellite.
Well, and I'm curious if you pull out a radio and scan through the AM or FM dial when you're in McMurdo, can you hear anything beyond these three stations?
I've scanned through my shortwave radio, like flipping it to FM and scan through it, and I've never heard anything besides the three radio stations, the three FM radio stations, I should clarify. I've never even tried AM. That's a really good point. Maybe I have. I can't remember. Now, if you go to shortwave radio, you can pick up, let's see, I've picked up the, well, okay, let me back up. So on my little shortwave radio set, I have not picked up anything. I haven't tried this winter, and propagation might be better now that the sun is down all the time. Now, when I worked in MacOps as a communications operator, late at night, when I was working on night shift, I would just sit and be ready to pick up the VHF or shortwave radio if a field camp called me for an emergency or for flight information or something like that. And every now and then, usually at about 2 or 3 in the morning, I would hear really, really garbled Indian pop music and Pashto language music coming from a shortwave radio station in Aligarh in northern India.
How romantic.
From All India.
That's great.
From All India Radio. Wow. Which is a shortwave station. And then if I tuned the radio a little bit, I could actually get a pretty good signal from this Indian shortwave radio station. So listening to live shortwave radio from India in Antarctica in the middle of the night when you've got the midnight sun, there's no darkness, it's light 24/7 in the summer. That was pretty fun.
Yeah.
So shortwave radio is a whole other, I mean, I could do a whole other interview about shortwave radio in Antarctica, because that's
do you have
pretty
hams
interesting
there?
As well.
Are there folks who do any amateur radio down there?
We do. I have a general license, which I rarely use. We do have a ham shack. There are a few other ham radio operators here right now. I had a friend here this summer who was really into it, and we did play around with the ham radio shack up there. We weren't able to reach a lot of people. Again, I think propagation is kind of problematic at times.
In Antarctica.
Who could you reach? Could you reach people in the Southern Hemisphere, maybe in New Zealand or in somewhere like Argentina?
We briefly got a hold of somebody who I think may have been probably in Argentina. It was somewhere in South America. I will say, so my best shortwave radio memory from this summer, besides hearing Indian pop music live from a shortwave station in India, was when we did, it's a tradition that we do in MacOps where we will have the McMurdo Christmas Choir. So that's a small group of folks from McMurdo come into the communication center, the MacOps room at McMurdo. And then we'll do a live broadcast of Christmas carols on shortwave radio, and we'll have groups of people from field camps stationed around the continent tune in and listen to us sing to them, and then they'll get on shortwave radio and sing back to us. So we'll have all of these scientists and contractors singing Christmas carols from research camps in the area. We had folks from South Pole singing to us, and then we had a guy who's one of the grantees who was here, who's really into ham radio, was telling us that he let folks on the American, the ARRL, I forget, but the ham radio.
Radio Relay League.
You know what I'm talking about.
The American Radio Relay League, yes.
Yeah, he let them know about this broadcast, and apparently there were folks who tried tuning in, and they could hear us from, like, Sweden, I think someone from Germany. told him that they could hear our Antarctica shortwave Christmas Carol wow. extravaganza broadcast.
That's wonderful.
So that it's was amazing. That was fun. And I never thought, and I will never, I don't think I will ever top this, emceeing a Christmas Carol show on shortwave radio for field camps in Antarctica. I don't think I will ever top that.
Yeah. Heard by people in fun. Sweden and Germany.
You're listening to Radio Survivor, and Jennifer Waits, you set up this interview with Elizabeth Delacquest because Elizabeth works at the radio station in Antarctica at McMurdo Station. I want to make sure that, because we have gone so deep into our love of all things radio. I wanted to make sure we get back to your questions that you had set up about this radio station.
Well, and also I don't want to, there's something on my mind because, you know, the whole reason
right.
I learned about your radio station was through watching Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown. And today, the day that we're recording this interview, this morning we found out that he died. And this conversation we're having today was many months in the making. So it's an odd and eerie coincidence that he died on the day that we're talking to you. And it's pretty incredible that he was given access to the radio station. There were little glimpses of the station in his episode. And it looks like he was on the air as maybe a guest DJ picking out some records to play. And I know you weren't at McMurdo when he stopped by, but what have you heard about his visit and particularly his time at the radio station?
I haven't heard a lot. My friend Romano, who's, if you watch that episode again, Romano's the guy who's in there with him. I think Romano had kind of a mixed take on him. I think Romano kind of thought that he was sort of cocky and arrogant because he's from New York City and, I don't know that he had the best impression of him, but my friend Doug, who is a Doug is a production cook at McMurdo, and Doug is probably on the radio like two or three times a week. He uses the studio a lot, and I know Doug met him, and Doug had a pretty favorable impression of him.
That's wonderful.
It was cook to cook in that case, yeah. right?
Isn't it always?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Elizabeth Delacquest, well, I was just wondering if there was ever dedicated talk programming.
There is not. We have a 5-minute podcast from NPR, like a news update that we play every morning. So I download it from NPR's website and then I put it on the radio station and then I run the same podcast for about 8 hours. And then in the afternoon, I load up the next one, like the newest updated one. And then I air that. And, really recently, just a couple weeks ago, I started airing the podcast from the Antarctic Sun. So my colleague, Mike Lucibella, is the editor of the Antarctic Sun, and he's been doing a podcast for the last 18 months or so. They're about 10 or 15 minutes long, and I've started airing those at the beginning of my show just to have something different. Those are the only podcasts that we play.
How exciting. And we're looking forward to...
Minds are blown now that there is also the Antarctic Sun podcast.
There's a podcast down in Antarctica.
Check out the Antarctic Sun podcast. Pretty cool.
But if I ever wanted to hear ICE FM's talk programming where your guest, where your volunteer DJs who also work there at McMurdo Station in their day jobs are talking to their coworkers about what their jobs are like, I'm out of luck. That stuff is just out in the ether.
I would have to... Yeah, you'd have to come visit me or I'd have to visit you and I'd have to play it from a thumb drive because it's not going to go on the internet.
Well, I have a desire to hear one volunteer DJ interview their coworkers about their jobs in Antarctica, but I'll keep that close to my chest.
Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing we haven't had you do is kind of walk us through what the station looks like. Could you do a brief walkthrough of what's in there and what's on the walls? Yes.
And I will send you a bunch of photos so you have a visual, but I will tell you, so the radio station is just a room at the end of the hall. In building 155, we have one really long hallway that we call Highway 1, and then there's a smaller one called Highway 2. And ICE Radio is at the end of Highway 2, so you walk in, and immediately to your left, you have almost a whole wall with CDs that Defense Media Activity sends us. And then immediately to your right, you have another shelf with CDs. At the back wall, As you come in the room, there is a wooden wall that's covered in artwork and people's signatures. So people will draw on the wall. People will sign their names. People will write their DJ name and their show name. That's pretty cool.
That sounds like a college radio station to me, or a community radio station.
Yeah. Yeah. And then to the back, to the right, there's the, at the back corner of the room, there's the desk with a radio board and a couple of microphones. We have two turntables for the vinyl. We have a phone. You can call into the radio station and be on the air. People will occasionally have call-in guests. My personal dream is to interview David Attenborough. I want to interview David Attenborough on Ice Radio so bad, and I can't figure out how to contact him because he's David Attenborough. I don't remember when this was. I think it was a couple years ago, maybe longer. Someone on Ice Radio interviewed William Shatner. So it's been done. We've had outside guests before.
Oh, so did you bring them in via phone or by Skype?
Yep. Via phone.
Okay.
So you have an actual phone number that does connect up to the rest of the world.
It doesn't connect to the rest of the world in that you can't. So someone from the outside world cannot call into the station, but I could call them and then put them on the air. And then if you're in town, you can just call the McMurdo extension number and I've be on it. The air that way.
So can you tell me about what you love about Ice Radio?
Yes, there are a few things I like about it. I like that there's just a novelty and a magic to doing a radio show in Antarctica. I mean, every time I go on the radio and do my show and say, you know, you're listening to Esoterra Australis on McMurdo live from McMurdo Station, Antarctica, even though I know that I have maybe 3 listeners tops, it's still really fun to say that. I also like that, at least for me, it's been an opportunity to try new things that I don't think I would have gotten around to doing back home. I had never played vinyl before I came down here. I didn't even know how to use a turntable before I came down here. And I never would have done an all vinyl show back home. I would not have done it. But because we have a really good vinyl collection and because we play what's provided to us, that was kind of that was an incentive to go, okay, I guess I'm trying this now because this is what I have. I also like that it's an opportunity to train volunteers from the community who might not do radio back home or might not even think to try radio back home, because the radio station is really, really... It's so low key. This is the most low key radio, like volunteer opportunity radio station that I have ever worked at, because we have 24-hour programming from American Forces Network playing like in the background that you can just turn up when you're not in the studio. So we always have something on air. We're not going to have dead air. So you don't have the pressure of like, oh my God, we got to have, you know, we have to have the DJ or, you know, the Democracy Now! Has to start right at 5 o'clock a.m. or we're going to scare off our donors or something like that. There's none of that. So it's very low key. And because we have the floater system where you can just come in and do a show when you have time, I think that allows people to approach the radio station not as like there's no sense of obligation with Ice Radio. It's a privilege having it. We're so lucky to have this radio station. A lot of people get a lot out of it. There are folks here who will come in to the vinyl room every single day during their lunch hour and just listen to records. There are people who will do DJ training and not even do a show. They'll just do the training to have access to the vinyl room because they love vinyl and they just want to have a quiet place to listen to music. So I think the fact that it's structured in such a way that it's a morale booster, and I think its primary role as far as serving the community is not necessarily like bringing you all this, you know, crazy underground music or bringing you underrepresented news. Like, we're definitely not in the business of politics. We're definitely not in the business of, you know, exploring controversial ideas, But we are, it definitely exists to brighten people's day, to help people learn new skills, and to allow people to kind of, I think it allows people to approach radio in a really different way and in a way that they might not be able to do back home. I think the fact that you can get training to be a DJ and then you don't have to, you're not expected to immediately commit to a show is really, really nice. And I think that makes it a little more accessible to people. Because typically, I mean, community radio stations back home are great in so many ways, but I think typically if you go to a community radio station or a college radio station and just say, hey, I want to get training to be a DJ and then just show up whenever I want to do a show. Like, you're not going to be able to do that. And at Ice Radio, you can do that as long as no one else has reserved the studio or has their own reserved time slot. You can come in and, you know, if you don't tread on someone else's toes and you don't interfere with someone else's show, you could be in there for 6 hours on a Sunday. We have one day off. We have Sunday off. You could spend your Sunday off hanging out in the radio studio, playing records. And, you know, you could do like a Grateful Dead hour off the cuff. You could do a bunch of classical music. You could do, you know, 2 hours of Latin. I kind of got on my soapbox there. Was any of that useful?
It was, we were all just smiling and nodding.
So is Ice Radio, is that one of the, I hate to say this because it sounds bad, but is it one of the few creative outlets at McMurdo or one of the most obvious creative outlets, I guess, at McMurdo?
No. So everybody here works 54 hours a week, so about 9 to 10 hours a day, 6 days a week. Most people get Sunday off unless they're working in fire dispatch or MAC ops in the summer or in the galley. So the kitchen staff have really different schedules. So we're kept busy. We all work really hard. In our free time, we have the radio station. There's a really nice craft room. People spend a lot of time there. We have a library during the summer. Right now, it's under, they're doing some construction projects in the dorm where the library is located. So we don't have a library per se. We have, there's a little coffee house, which is also closed down for the winter. We have free DVD rental at the station store. So people are, there's a really good band room with a lot of musical instruments people can play. So no, I mean, I think people here are pretty good at entertaining themselves in their free time. Yeah. And we'll have movie nights, we'll have open mic nights. We had a science fair a couple of weeks ago, which was really fun. In the summer, we have a huge alternative art gallery, we call it. So Antarcticans are, we have sports leagues. We're a very resourceful bunch. We're a very creative bunch. And part of the reason why I like McMurdo is just people here are, they're resourceful, they're hardworking, they're really creative, and they're quirky. People here aren't afraid to be quirky. It's not uncommon to, you know, walk into like the coffee house or a sports event and see someone wearing, you know, a full penguin onesie. Like I will sometimes wear my penguin onesie to Sunday brunch or at Ice Stock, there were a ton of people wearing costumes. Right. So I think Ice Radio fits very nicely into the community as far as just being a really fun, it's a morale booster. It's an opportunity for people to try being a radio DJ, which again is something that I think you have to, I think at a lot of college and community radio stations back home, at least ones that I've encountered, when you want to, if you want to get DJ training or learn how to run a radio board, you're expected to commit to the activity and commit to the station in a way that you don't have to with Ice Radio. And that's not to say that you don't have responsibilities. I mean, there's a form that all DJs and guests have to sign that say, you know, I will abide by the rules right. of the National Science Foundation. I'm not going to swear. I won't have alcohol in the studio, etc. So you do have to be responsible, but you don't have to,
yeah,
you don't have to commit to a whole lot of time. I mean, it's, you know, the radio station is there for you. It's not that you have to be there for the radio station.
That's wonderful.
That's cool. So I just want to thank Elizabeth Delaquest, broadcast engineer at McMurdo Station in Antarctica. Thanks for coming on the show. It's been so exciting for me, having been fascinated about this place for months now. So it's great to have this insider tour of both McMurdo and the radio operations at ICE Radio there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so honored to be on the show. So I appreciate it a lot.
Jennifer, thank you so much for staying hot on the trail.
As soon as I caught a glimpse of this radio station on TV, I immediately went into research mode and was obsessed and was thinking about how can I visit this place. And
right. Life goals.
And pretty quickly, actually, within a few days, I had figured out somebody who knew somebody there. And it just kind of shows how interconnected the community, radio community really is, that I was able to find somebody who was likely going to work in radio in Antarctica through another friend. So
absolutely.
It's kind of crazy.
Absolutely. Can we thank that friend? Can we say thank you to Sabrina Roach, friend of Radio Survivor, who helped put us in contact?
Yes, we can definitely thank Sabrina Roach. I think she just sort of mentioned on social media that she had a friend in Antarctica. I hadn't even put out a call for information. I just happened to notice her mentioning she had a friend there. And since Sabrina is a very committed radio person, I thought, I wonder if your friend might be doing radio there.
Yeah.
And it turns out she was.
I don't know if I've said it on the air, but Sabrina Roach is a shadow producer of Radio Survivor because of how much work they do just making connections in this community here in the Pacific Northwest, but also globally.
Globally, yeah.
You know, the work that Sabrina does to strengthen the community, radio community, really has lent a lot of value and tips. And, you know, entire whole episodes of the show have come about because of Sabrina's work. So yet again, thank you to Sabrina Roach.
She had, you know, an entire job for Brown Paper Tickets where she was helping people create community radio stations, which, you know, sounds like a dream job.
And we should mention that Elizabeth Deliquest there in Antarctica has worked with some other people, other friends of Radio Survivor that didn't make it into the interview.
Yeah, so Elizabeth worked with Petri Dish, formerly the Prometheus Radio Project, now a sort of independent radio engineer and radio station builder. And Elizabeth worked with Petri helping to build stations in Seattle area in the Pacific Northwest, low power FM stations, part of this last wave of low power FM stations. And we want to call out one station in particular, Space FM at 101.1 FM in Seattle, because that is also a Radio Survivor affiliate station. We're heard Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. on that station, and Elizabeth Deliquest helped to put that station on the air as a radio engineer helping to build low power FM stations. I'll put in a quick plug that we can be heard on low power stations and community stations around the country. Go to radiosurvivor.com to learn more. And if you know a station that could use some extra cool programming about radio and community media, tell them about us, please. Tell them about us.
Tell them about this episode of Radio Survivor, yeah, where we interview one of the people that helps run the community radio station in Antarctica.
Yeah, so they should have our show on the air. And if you're listening on the radio, say thank you to your local station. We'd really, really appreciate that. What do you think? Let us know what you thought this episode, or if you have other suggestions of unique stations, far-flung stations we should cover, drop us a line, podcast@radiosurvivor.com. I'm Paul Reese-Mandel. I'm joined here in the Portland studio by Eric Klein. And joining us from the San Francisco Satellite Studio is Jennifer Waits. And I wanted to have some follow-up here from last week's episode, in which both of you talked with the person who started the hip-hop radio archive. And the follow-up I wanted to have, I'm going to nerd out here. So
yeah. Well, I called upon you, Paul. You were not able to join us for that particular interview with Ryan McMichael of the Hip Hop Radio Archive. And I'm going to take this opportunity to tell the listeners, please go listen to last week's episode of Radio Survivor, where we talked to Ryan McMichael, founder of the Hip Hop Radio Archive. It's one of my most favorite interviews.
Episode
again,
number 145,
Jennifer,
radiosurvivor.com/podcast.
Jennifer Waits, you've been on fire lately. producing episodes of Radio Survivor, because that was definitely one of my favorite episodes. And I called upon you, Paul Rees-Mendel. You weren't there with us, but when Ryan McMichael mentioned something radio nerd related, and I didn't know, and Jennifer didn't know, and even Ryan didn't know what it was. He talked
about there being leaky cable on his college campus prior to them having an FM, a fully fledged FM broadcast station.
And he admitted that he could have been wrong about the terminology. So I just want
to... I'm not here to call him out. I just wanted I wanted to lay some clarity. I'm surprised we haven't gotten emails yet about that.
Yeah,
usually when, coming, when right? those sorts of things, we get those corrective emails, podcast@radiosurvivor.com. But I think what he was referring to actually was just cable radio, because the technology exists just like you can put television signals over a cable, like cable television.
Right.
There has existed cable radio.
Ryan McMichael was referring to one of the methods of transmission for a college radio station that he worked at.
And that he said that on his campus that you could, as a student, get a little adapter to plug into the cable TV system and plug it into your radio so that you could listen to the college station.
And this was at WMWC at University of Mary Washington.
Right. This is probably what he meant, because leaky cable is actually AM radio, not
carrier
FM.
Carrier current, which is...
It's very like carrier current. Basically, it's just a cable that you bury somewhere and a low power signal that can only be received so many feet from the cable itself puts it out. It was often used in drive-in theaters so that people could tune in their AM radio to get the sound from the movie. So that would be leaky cable. He meant cable FM. And cable FM has existed for a long time. I don't know how well it's supported anymore, but back in the days when you might just plug the cable from the wall directly into your television, as opposed to having a converter box and all that extra stuff, in the analog days of cable television, often you could get a service from your cable company in which you would get an adapter to plug it into your stereo receiver. And one reason you might do this is so you could get things like MTV in stereo, because in the early days of MTV, stereo television did not exist, and they would run spots in MTV. Maybe we'll find one on YouTube where it would say, call your cable company to get MTV plugged into your radio. But there might also be other types of programming, basically cable radio stations that would only be available via cable might also be there. In some cases, some cable companies would allow you to hear distant radio stations in the same way you might be able to see a distant market television station, like where I grew up in central coastal New Jersey. You didn't really get New York stations over the air very well, but you got New York stations, television stations on TV. You might be able to hear New York radio stations on the cable radio. So this is a technology that existed, but I think is largely faded away in the digital era. I haven't heard much of it since the late 80s or early 90s, but I suspect that was probably the technology they used. Now, I think if you were on a college campus and you told a kid, you can get cable radio, we'll give you the special adapter, they would just stare at you like you were speaking gibberish. Well, I think we have fully exhausted our radio geekery for today. Thank you, Jennifer, once again for connecting us with Elizabeth Deliquess and bringing us that amazing interview.
I should let listeners to the radio show know that if you want to hear the full length version of that interview, we had so much fun talking with Elizabeth that it couldn't all fit.
It went past the confines of an hour.
It couldn't all fit on today's radio program. But if you listen to the podcast version of this episode of Radio Survivor, you can hear the whole thing.
Go to radiosurvivor.com/podcast. I want to remind you that we are a listener and reader supported enterprise. To learn more about how you can help us keep doing what we do, go to radiosurvivor.com/support. And of course, we'd always like to hear from you. Email at podcast@radiosurvivor.com. Jennifer, thank you for joining us for this episode and for being lead producer. We really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I could not personally tour this radio station into Antarctica, this was the next best thing.
Absolutely the next best thing. Thank you very much, Eric.
Oh, it was always a pleasure. Jennifer, there's always next year. You might be able to make it to Antarctica in 2019.
One can dream.
I'm Paul Rees-Mendel, and thank you very much for spending another hour with us.